This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
And this is Doug Pollard bringing it to you on Joy 94.9, Australia's only full-time gay and lesbian radio station. Joining me in the studio today is Rod Swift. Now, at the recent Labour Party conference, all eyes were on the prize of marriage equality, but mindful that marriage isn't everything, as some people who aren't very keen on marriage keep reminding me, the delegates considered a range of other issues of importance to our community, and that's what we're going to take a look at now. Rod, welcome back after a long absence.
Well, a long absence from the Rainbow Report, of course. Yes. People can listen to me on the news, usually on the weekends.
Indeed. But to this studio with moi.
Yes.
Okay, take us through. The one I know about at the conference was the changes to the policy regarding GLBTI aged care.
Well, that's right. Aged care was one of the big changes. In fact, there were three or four key changes besides the marriage vote. And sort of the marriage vote was the elephant in the room, did actually...
Sucked all the oxygen out of everything else, didn't it?
Overshadowed them all, that's right. And look, aged care one was quite interesting. They passed a new policy in Chapter 6 of the platform, and it was number 35, and it was that Labor recognises the need to provide culturally appropriate aged care, including strategies that address, and in a number of different areas, people with culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds experiencing dementia to make sure that they're taken care of in aged care. Also for Indigenous Australians to have and maintain links to culture and country wherever possible. But also, specifically mentioned, the experience of discrimination for LGBTI, older Australians in aged care, based on presumptions of both universal heterosexuality and asexuality in personal relationships between older Australians. And this one, I know, has been bubbling along. I know that number of aged care groups, the GLBTI aged care groups, have been pushing this barrier. It's so great that Labor has finally taken this one on board.
Yes. Well, obviously, you know, Jo Harrison is the name that springs to mind. She's been very, very vocal about
this.
Yes,
she has.
I know she's listening, and I want to say get well soon to Jo. She's recently had an operation on her jaw, and she's all wired up and rather painful. So, unfortunately, also rather quiet, so she can't be with us today, but get well soon, Jo.
But it's one of the more neglected things in our community that we don't seem to think about it. It is given such low media priority.
Well, we don't
priority.
Think about sex in relation to old people, do we?
I mean, that's
old
right.
people don't have sex. Come on.
And
it is the attitude that you get everywhere.
And it's this heterosexual assumption that people, if they are in a couple relationship, the majority of them will be in a heterosexual couple relationship, and our aged care facilities take care of that particular situation. But there's this huge vacuum for people in same-sex relationships.
Now, this is a change in Labour Party policy. How soon are we going to see this reflected in Labour government policy?
Well, I think that will be something that the Minister for Aged Care will need to look at. I mean, it's now obviously policy for the government, and I know that they've been rolling out funding for certain projects for aged care, and they certainly have put more focus on in the last couple of budgets for GLBTI-specific aged care. And we're starting to see some projects that are GLBTI-specific popping up, and we also have not just Jo Harrison's work, but also groups like the Gay and Lesbian Retirement Association that's based in WA that have been again pushing this barrow. So I think and aged care is such a wide umbrella. It's not just accommodation, it's also sometimes medical care, nursing care, things like that.
And it's help in the home too.
Exactly, and home and occasional care. So it really is such a large umbrella, and it will be very interesting to see what Labor does taking this particular conference position forward to actually implementing that as policy. And I suppose one of the things that will inform them on that particular debate, of course, is one of the other areas, which was a recommendation for ministerial advisory committees.
Yes, and should Clem Newton-Brown happen to be listening, we're still waiting for the one in Victoria as
That's
well.
Right. And of course, in Victoria, we do have experience of ministerial advisory committees on areas like health. And in fact, one of the people at Rainbow Labor, one of the people at the conference, actually spoke about the success of some of the Victorian state-level ministerial advisory committees
federally. Yeah, but they all died when Baillieu came in,
That's
didn't
right.
they? As soon as the Liberals took over, we were promised that the health ministry Ministerial Advisory Committee would continue.
And it didn't.
Bailey and Co. have been in there just over a year now. I spoke to Clem Newton-Brown and Mary Wooldridge last week, and they said, yes, it is on our list of to-dos, you know, but you would think after a year it would be somewhere near the top of that list of to-dos, and I'm not seeing any sign of that.
Well, departing from the Labour Party conference results, I mean, it's very, very interesting that you raise this. I mean, if we're talking about GLBTI policy vacuums, I mean, the state government has one of the, I think, the most terrible list of promises that are unfulfilled so far, with a to-do list that doesn't seem to have any deadlines. I mean, effective time managers always have a deadline for things. So for Ted Bailey and Clem and others, Mary, you need to tell us what the deadline is for these things, because you have
I know that's a bit of a segue away from what we were talking about, but it is illustrative. Also, before the last election, going back to the issue of MAC Ministerial Advisory Committee, MAC for short, at federal government level, that's something we've never had.
That's right. We've never really had anything. I mean,
In fact, we've had no kind of direct input to federal government, partly because John Howard wasn't interested in talking to us at all, unless it was about AIDS.
And Keating before that, really, it was only on HIV, AIDS and immigration.
And ditto there, yeah. And the excuse has often been, well, you don't have one national gay organisation we can talk to.
That shouldn't be a reason and an excuse. For example, multicultural
but
interest
in
this
country. It has been in the past. Do you think this will make any difference?
It should make a world of difference, I think. I think that that this Ministerial Advisory Committee idea, it comes out of the critical mass that ironically is the marriage equality movement too, because the marriage equality movement generally is seen now to be, while it's a number of groups that have formed together, it is one voice in a way, that there is a lot of, in a way, commonality between the groups. And I think the government is starting to realise that there is a huge critical mass of people out there that are GLBTI or their families that want clear direction on government policy, and that the government needs to consult, and that the best way to do that is to arrange ministerial advisory committees that represent a broad cross-section of the community.
Now, I seem to remember a kind of semi-official promise before the last general election, or maybe it was the general election before that. I lose count sometimes. We have this huge engine inside government that is called social inclusion, you know. And the whole point of that is it's a whole of government initiative to bring various minorities and various sort of marginalized groups into consideration in all government policies. And it's got all the ethnic groups in there, it's got all the migrant groups in there. The big glaring hole in there is that there's nothing about GLBTI. Now, I seem to remember a little semi-official promise that would happen after the last election, or maybe even the one before, that GLBTI would be added into the list. It hasn't happened.
No, it hasn't happened officially. Unofficially, though, some departments have already started to liaise. Attorney General's department has been doing so for about 3 years. I mean, one of the things that Australian Coalition for Equality had quite a deal of input into was that we were starting to be advised to the human rights roundtables that would occur, which was basically a summit of major groups across different sectors, whether it be multicultural, Indigenous, and GLBTI was starting to be included there. So we weren't necessarily being ignored anymore or just left out of being at the table. So it is starting to happen, but having a more coordinated approach, a better coordinated approach and a better planned approach is a key step forward. And I mean, not just the Victorian government has done this, but I mean, Tasmania 2020, the Tasmania Together document, again, a broad cross-government, multi-portfolio social inclusion strategy, and having GLBTI people in that involvement process was a key factor of it. And I think that is, again, a very good example and model that the federal government can use.
And the Victorian government, I mentioned yet again.
Yes.
I just got to keep the digs going here, you know.
And look, the areas that they're wanting to at least start to target is health, education, Medicare, and other.
We always start with health, though, don't we? I mean, I suppose that's the easiest way in. But I do get a bit tired of everything gay being wrapped up under the health umbrella all the time. You know, first of all, it was AIDS, and that's how we got money out of them. Now it's mental health is the big thing at the moment, and that's the way we get them to take us seriously, because we've got big mental health problems as a community.
And then they're so surprised when we say that we need aged care funding.
Yeah.
Because they don't think about it, or that we need funding in Medicare, or that we need funding in all sorts of areas.
In other words, if they'd started to take a whole of government approach, they wouldn't keep getting blindsided like this.
That's right. And one of the blindsided issues, I think, that was a bit of a shame out of this conference, is that I don't know what happened with the sex files report in regard regards to intersex and transgendered people.
I don't remember hearing anything about that at all.
As to whether Labor was doing anything on that, so that's something I'm going to check up on, which is very, very interesting. I think the other thing that came out of the conference very quickly, of course, and there has been a little bit of movement, is certificates of no impediment to marriage, which is sort of linked to the marriage issue, but is sort of the snout in the door, I think, on marriage.
Yes, now just to those of you who don't know what these were, you can, of course, go and have your same-sex marriage in Canada or France or wherever else they've got, Spain for the moment. But in order to have a same-sex marriage in another country, that other country has to know that you're not married in Australia, and therefore you have to have something called a Certificate of No Impediment to Marriage, or a CNI. Now, they hand these out to heterosexual couples like confetti, but if you're a part of a gay couple and you want to have a wedding overseas, until this passed through conference, the Australian government was being rather petty-minded and refusing to issue one for you on the grounds that your marriage wouldn't be legal back in the UK, so they couldn't in Australia, so they couldn't facilitate it.
It was a lot weaseling. Of sophistry and weaseling. It was from the former Attorney General made this administrative decision to stop issuing these certificates of no impediment so that it would potentially try and block same-sex couples from marrying overseas and then trying to come back to Australia and claim...
Anyway, it's gone.
Well, it's not gone yet. The Attorney General has agreed that they will work on removing this. It certainly was a policy passed at the conference. The Attorney General has issued a media release already on
this. And it is going to be... policy. We're going to have to leave that there, Rod. So it wasn't entirely a waste of time at the Labour Party conference. We got quite a lot out of it. In fact, it was a very good conference from our point of view.
It was. I think that now, of course, the pressure does go on the Liberal Party, and the Liberal Party is not as open with their conferences.
It's going to be fun. Okay. Thanks, Rod.
Thanks.
Now, game changers don't have to be on a national scale. Quite small changes at local level can have big impacts, and that's what my next guest is all about and what he's hoping for, as he brings something called the Keshet Programme to Victorian Jewish schools. Jonathan Barnett is up next.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.